Why was it important for you to return to Mississippi 50 years later for the Mississippi Freedom Summer 50th Anniversary Conference?
The work that we did in the 60s, certainly the 64 Freedom Summer, was work that is relevant for today. Going back to Mississippi, where I had not been in 50 years, to have the opportunity to sit down with colleagues who were on the ground with me during frightening, violent times, as well as young people who came to the conference, young people from all over the country, hundreds, the opportunity to listen to them and, when asked, to teach them about organizing, about coalition building, to determine that the work that was done then is extremely relevant today.
And why did you choose to be a part of Mississippi Freedom Summer in 1964?
I had, as a college student, begun participating in Freedom Rides and in sit-ins from 1962, when I learned about the sit-ins that had occurred here in North Carolina in 1960, when I learned about the convening of a group of students at Shaw University in North Carolina, the oldest historically black college, when I listened to President-elect Kennedy put out the call for community service, for serving our country, all of that came together for me with my own family background, Eastern European Jews who themselves had been the subject of great violence, great prejudice, great fear for their lives, who had come to this country and experienced opportunity unknown. Putting all of those factors together compelled me to act in a way consistent with what our country's laws and values and Constitution demanded.
What did your parents think of their very young daughter heading south to help black men and women?
They were terrified. They were appropriately terrified, as my father had said at the time, every time he got a phone call. His immediate response was, is she, referring to me, is she okay? There were AP photographs that were widely disseminated of a particular time that I was arrested, and I was being dragged by the police into a police car, practicing civil disobedience nonviolently. And when that picture began to circulate, the fear that existed in my family's home was understandable, and yet my father acknowledged that he was enormously proud of what I did. He never asked me to stop, though the fear never abated.
Tell us about its origins, the idea of we're going to Mississippi and we're going to put boots on the ground and register black men and women to vote.
The origins, sadly, were in the reality that the violence that was being perpetrated among black Mississippians who were attempting to register to vote, to organize, to gain some economic independence, that no one was taking notice. When Herbert Lee was killed in 1961 in Amick County, Mississippi, when Lewis Allen, an observer of that murder, was killed before he could be protected and testified, the countless, nameless men and women, black Mississippians, when the three civil rights workers were dug up from that earthen dam 40-some-odd days after their disappearance, the number of young male black bodies discovered. So the idea of recruiting young people, white young people, not exclusively, but largely from across the country, was with the recognition that by going into Mississippi, that the country would take notice. And exactly what happened, parents began to call their congressmen, protect my son or daughter. Parents of the students in the summer project began to organize. parents began to collect clothing, to send food, recognize the level of deprivation that existed in poor rural communities of black men and women in Mississippi. It was the genius of Robert Moses, one of my colleagues on the SNCC staff, and implementation under Bob's direction with training of these young people, what they could expect, including the dangers, and how they were going for the first time to be folks, white folks, who black Mississippians were going to, they were going to be treated with respect. They were going to be treated with dignity. They didn't have to lower their eyes and shuffle. This was enormous.
Did the deaths of Herbert Lee and Lewis Allen and ultimately Andrew Goodman, James Chaney, and Michael Schwerner force the nation to look racism in the eye?
Well, it did in large measure. I think we can all acknowledge that we would not have had a 1964 Civil Rights Act, a 1965 Voting Rights Act, had it not been for the visibility that the work done in Mississippi and in other states had not that been forced, had the country not seen the hoses in Birmingham, had the country not learned about the deaths of Andy and of Mickey and of others. I don't think we would have had that legislation. I don't think there would have been the Justice Department presence as it evolved. Yes, I think we can attribute a substantial amount of social and economic and political change to the work done that summer, but also, as we discussed at great length in Mississippi, while there was much accomplished, it is very clear, one only need look at what is happening in North Carolina, the retrenchment that's occurring. The lessons learned really dictate the work ahead.
Dr. Robert Moses said he knew right away that Andrew Goodman, James Chaney, and Michael Schwerner were murdered when he first heard the news of their disappearance. Did that discourage some folks from going? They said, you know, this is just too dangerous for us to participate in.
When the three guys disappeared, we still had the summer volunteers out at Oxford, Ohio, where we were running training programs. So the students, the volunteers, were still all together. Remarkably, when Bob and when Rita Schwerner, Mickey's wife, informed the group of volunteers during the training session before they left for Mississippi, very few decided not to go. Most of them continued the training, got their assignments, what project, what town, what community they would be working in, and they went to Mississippi.
Did Freedom Summer ultimately lead you to law school at Boston University?
It did. I had previously been accepted at Columbia to do graduate work in sociology and economics, and it became brutally clear to me, not just Freedom Summer, I stayed and worked in Mississippi till December of 1965, that developing a very specific set of skills that I could use in civil rights and human rights work simply made sense to me. And so I went to law school, as interestingly did Eleanor Holmes Norton and Marion Wright Edelman and many other names of people who committed themselves to working in the field of civil rights or the many other movements, really, that came out of Mississippi, women's rights and Latino immigration issues. One can trace back to certainly the SNCC staff many of the rights and the movements that evolved. So for me, yes, law school and the work I've done since, the work I do here in Asheville on a pro bono basis, is all rooted in my experiences in the civil rights movement.
Many of the gains realized because of Mississippi Freedom Summer could not have been won without the energy and commitment of many very young people, including yourself. Do you see that kind of commitment among young people today?
There were several hundred young people, college students, young adults, who were part of our commemoration, our week-long gathering in Jackson, Mississippi last week. And having the opportunity to talk with those young people, to hear their ideas, to learn about their acquisition of the skills, the art, and the craft of organizing, their vibrant, energetic, collaborative spirit, I thought was something that gave me enormous hope. I've been getting emails from some of the young people with whom I spoke, and they literally embraced me last week in Jackson. They literally expressed thanks and appreciation, which I find a bit awkward, certainly humbling, but they want to continue to learn. My message to them is, you need to set your agenda. Ask me how I can help you advance. But I saw such an encouraging spirit on the part of young folks who know it's their turn. So, I find that at least a possibility. And it's important for us, as old folks, to remind ourselves that we were young, that we made a lot of mistakes, but that we continued forward and supporting the young people whose turn it is our role now.
Well, with that in mind, are you optimistic about race relations in America? Are you optimistic about human rights in America?
I'm ambivalent, frankly. I do try, with the help of my old colleagues, to recognize that there have been substantial gains, gains legally, statutorily, in some case law. There have been some attitudinal shifts. But look, we in Asheville a year ago had a situation where a young black woman leaving a department store at the Asheville Mall was accused of shoplifting. I mean, a classic shopping mall black. The incident was eventually resolved, but it was traumatizing. It was traumatizing. The fact that that still happens, and that's one very small example. So that's the cause of the ambivalence. That's the reason, that's the motivation for continuing to do this work.
Does it seem like 50 years?
When I was back and spending some of the most valuable time for me in Mississippi was not our plenary sessions or our workshops. Some of the most valuable time was extended conversation with some of my colleagues back then, particularly with some, I want to call them the young Howard students, but of course they're my age now. And when I'm with them, no. I don't feel old. It does not seem possible that the time has passed because the spirit and the dedication, it is still there. Many of us are still doing some version of the work that's related to what we did 50 years ago. Those conversations, they're almost identical. The bond, David, is so strong. Because, of course, we were so totally dependent upon each other. There was no one else to help us get through. And our lives were literally dependent on each other. Those are bonds that are not broken. So when we're back together, it does not feel as if half a century has passed.
Carol Rogoff Hallstrom participated in Mississippi Freedom Summer 50 years ago this summer. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.